Welcome into another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Gapier. How are you this morning, Mike?
I'm doing okay. I've been spending a lot of time lately getting ready for Christmas with the family, helping my spouse get the house ready. For, you know, daughters coming in from out of town over the holidays and doing a lot of pop duties. That's what my grandchildren call me.
Okay. So you're going to have all the family in for the holidays?
Pretty much, yes.
Good deal.
But they'll be coming in today. The day we're going to, actually, they're coming, driving here today. We're going to be going to the bowl game in Shreveport. I managed to get on the bus for that event. I know I need a layer up, but hoping this, a few other people support the football team up in Shreveport a week from Friday.
Absolutely. I think this is a great opportunity, not only for Coach Stez in the program, but for our fans to see something different. And maybe also to appreciate the New Orleans Bowl a little bit more, that it's indoors and you don't have to worry about the weather.
Well, interesting, the Independence Bowl back in the 80s when Coach Stokely was here, that was the bowl we aspired to. We had a good enough record some years, but they had no interest in us whatsoever. I guess with the proliferation of bowls now, and the they think maybe we can support it being local and maybe help the crowd a little bit. We hope so.
I hope so too.
I imagine you'll be doing another pre-bowl podcast with some of the other football guys sometime next week.
Yes, I'll be talking actually to Raging Dave Amato tonight. So we'll post that tomorrow morning with a review. And I'm hoping to get on some people from the Independence Bowl before the week is out and talk about activities there. So.
Well, basketball-wise, despite the personal things I've got going on, I've managed to attend all three games that we've played since the last time we spoke. Went over to New Orleans on that first Saturday in December, which was a pretty humid day. A lot of fog on the trip. And, of course, made the Samford game Saturday night and the Louisiana Christian game on Monday. So we can talk about those as we proceed here.
Absolutely. Let's go jump right into the UNO game. I did not make the make the drive to New Orleans. Kind of disappointed that I didn't, but I know we text back and forth, but what were your thoughts on the game?
My first thought was, as soon as the game started, intensity expected in a state rivalry reminded me of the beginning of the Louisiana Tech game, but it was very physical. And I was thinking to myself, there's going to be some issues with the officiating and they don't get a control over this. And on both teams, you know, it was pretty close that we blew out to, I guess, a 7 or 8 point lead. I know the UNO coach was disappointed that they didn't get to the free line more, but, and we got there more times than they did, but they were hacking Jordan and Lewis down there. And there was one play, I know somebody said that Jay Walker mentioned, Brown goes up, he's fouled, no call. Goes up, he's fouled, no call. And then Lewis goes up, no call. So as many free throws as we took, which look here, we took 35, we could have shot 50 if they would have called it as tight as a, you know, on the true fouls. Of course, nobody wants to see that many fouls called in a game. So that was my thought. It was a lot of fouls early on. We played okay. You know, Greg was actually making some outside shots. He had a great game, Greg Williams Jr., that is. We had a little lead. UNO's coach starts the technical foul fest midway through the first half or two-thirds of the first half. There's just a normal play where they take a shot, we get the rebound, we're going down court, and all of a sudden there's a technical foul call. And we couldn't figure that out. And I told the people I was with, the other Cajun fans, say, he's just, that was the left fire of my team, technical. He really didn't really think there's anything going on. He just wanted his team to have a little fire. They were down 6 or 7 at the point, and it worked because as the half ended, our 7 point lead became one. We had an unfortunate play where their best 3 point shooter, guy named Johnson, knocks one in, and he gets fouled, and he makes the free throw. Then later on in the half, we're going down court trying to get the last shot, and we rush, and we throw the ball away. Little play by a point guard there I didn't understand, and that allows them to hit a three-point shot at the buzzer. So they've got 7 points late in the half that makes it a close game. Their coach technical foul helped him. We only made one out of two the technicals. We went to the free throw line to shoot technicals 3 times the game and made one out of two all 3 times. So late in the game, free throws became an issue, of course. So But, you know, there was a concern there because both our big men, Lewis and, well, not Lewis, Jordan and Isaiah Richards, his backup, were in foul trouble in the first half going in. So we were worried about that at halftime. In the past, you know, I've seen enough of Coach Moreland's teams. You know, if the other team gets a late run, yeah, this is a mature enough team. They didn't really bother him. We go back into the second half. We build out a lead again. And then the craziness with the technical fouls begins. You were watching on TV. Maybe you saw it better than once. But what we understood was we had a warning, and they called us three times for actually delay a game for, I guess, after made baskets or balls under the basket, not letting play resume, I guess, promptly. You saw that on TV. Was that what the guys on the call were saying?
Yeah, they were a little confused as well. And then I guess someone talked to them, or then they figured it out. I didn't get all that, quite honestly. Why they were doing that? That just seems to me that's a power grab by the officials that I don't like. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you know, where the officials are making this as part of the game, it became a technical foul fest. You know, the UNL coach got one earlier, but then a couple of his guys lost control of their emotions, and they were both appropriate calls. You know, we'll back up late in the second. As the second half goes along, we build again a 9-point lead. And then, you know, these technicals going back and forth, they're calling them for losing their cool. We're making one out of two. They're calling us for throwing them, I guess, not proceeding or touching the ball out there, made basket. One time I thought one of our guys gave the ball to the ref after made basket, and they still called a technical. I was still confused. Those of us there. But anyway, so game comes along. You know, we don't have a lot of turnovers, but it seems like we always have some critical times. We get in foul trouble where our two big guys, both Isaiah and Jordan, and Jordan had a decent game when he had 16 points.
Yep.
As usual, Mr. Consistency Lewis actually comes in there and he makes the key baskets down the stretch. We talked to each other and the group of Cajun fans there, and with 5-10 minutes to go, we said, hey, we're going to end up this game with four guards. And lo and behold, that's what we did. But backing up a step, there are two big guys named Kirkland and Jackson, actually were pretty good at driving the ball to the basket when we couldn't defend them. We won. In foul trouble, even Jordan and Isaiah were not being as aggressive as they could have because they knew we were in foul trouble. And so they were getting the ball to the basket on the dribble drive just for the big men. And they kept cutting the lead. And, you know, next thing you know, Johnson hits a three-pointer and they're up by three. But in that interim, though, I caught something. Jordan fouls out and he's falling back. He's got the ball. Maybe he should have passed it out, but he sort of slips. Falls backward into the guy. It probably was an offensive foul, according to our coaches at the game. I thought, well, did they pull his shorts and that type of thing? I really couldn't tell. So the substitute for Jordan and for Isaiah, when they both foul out, is Chancellor White, who's played a pure freshman from Texas. He's played some inside a little bit because he's got a lot of strongest in his men here. He's 6'6". But I watched very closely, and as soon as he comes in, their big men take him to the basket using their side, and they score right over him. At that point, Coach Marlin puts in Jalen Dalcourt. So we are playing with four guards, just as my friends had predicted. What actually helps us defensively, I think, even though Jalen may not be as big as those other guys, he's senior, he knows how to play maybe defense a little better, and he force stops that drive, even when a guy's 6 inches taller than him. So I thought that was a significant move by Coach Marlin, and of course it paid off late in the game.
I think as a guard play, if you can keep the big men outside of the zone, the bottom of the basket, if you can keep them outside and force them to take a jumper or something like that, or a shot from outside, I think that's the advantage of the guards in their quickness. But once they get down low, I think it's nearly impossible for a guard most of the time. Yeah.
Right, because they're going to throw a ball over his head. But what Jalen did there is, you know, I guess a matter of routine, that the bigs for UNL had been taking the ball at the top of the key, a free throw line, driving down when Chancellor was in and whenever our other guys, big guys, were in because we were in foul trouble. So Jalen had trouble shooting the ball, and it has been lately, but he made one big basket in the first half. And, you know, we're down three after their three-pointer. The only guy who made three-pointers in the whole game for them was Johnson, he went 4-for-7. The rest of the team went 0-for-6. Yeah. So, and, you know, we knew that. And he's the guy who made the ones right at the end of the first half, which hurt us. So they're up 3. Nice shot, actually. We had them guarded pretty well. So Mr. Lewis scores a basket, puts us down 1. We force a turnover. Great. We hadn't trapped much or pressed much in the game coming. We forced a turnover. And then we, you know, pretty much out of timeouts. They call our last one there. We run a great backdoor to Jalen, and he fumbles it out of bounds. For a second, I thought maybe the UNO player knocked it out of his hand. I was told no later. It definitely was off Jalen on the replay. Yes. So, you know, so we actually then, okay, there's a few seconds left. We trap again. I mean, there's a couple of times we almost got another steal, you know, with our defensive pressure. We foul one of their best free throw shooters, and the moment gets too big for him. You know, when he missed the first one, a little bit short, excuse me. I figured, hey, we got a chance for him to miss the second. And we're out of timeouts there. And, you know, sure enough, he misses it. We go back down, run a very similar play without any timeouts. So we probably had run call a couple plays in the timeouts. Jalen gets to the basket. There's no doubt it was a foul. I thought for a second maybe that he called charge. But people who watched, you can tell me, was there any hesitation for the officials to watch it on TV and calling that foul?
Not that I remember, no. So I thought it was a good call.
Sometimes they won't make that call late in the game. But the UNO official folks didn't really complain about that particular call in the post game. I think they knew it was a foul. So the referees, despite losing control of the game from the opening whistle and having the technical fest and couldn't figure out what was going on, didn't swallow his whistle, showed some courage there. And when Jalen made the first, I knew he was going to make the second one. And another thing that confused me, okay, both teams are out of timeouts, so UNO's now 1. There's 2.5 seconds to go. And the shot they take is one pass in there and throw it there. I was surprised they didn't try to take a couple of dribbles and get closer to half court before they lost the attempted buzzer beater. So, it's an interesting game. The previous night, I guess, during the week, there was a rebounders meeting, and I was talking to some of our new assistant coaches. And later on, here's the term I use for them. I said, UNO is going to play better than they are. You have to be prepared for that. And I really mean that. They're not as good as they're going to play better than they ever have. And pretty much that's what happens every time we play in New Orleans. You can disagree with some of Coach Marlin's comments about how up our opponents get for us, but UNO it definitely is, because they haven't beaten us since Coach Marlin's been here. And all our games in New Orleans have gone right down the wire. We play okay, not great. They play maybe with some intensity. They played really well, but those two technical fouls and even their coach showed maybe they lost control of their emotions and it hurt them.
You know, for me, I think we focus too much sometimes when we're talking about teams getting up for our team. I think for me, it's the same thing probably for Georgia Southern that plays FBS football when they play an FCS team. I don't know who that may be. In basketball, I think the perceived smaller schools always get up a little bit more for the perceived bigger schools, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. It's not probably indicative just to UL. I think you probably see that around the conference. There's a little animosity.
Agreed, and we probably get up, you know, when we play. We definitely, you know, we lost Louisiana Tech last year. Louisiana Tech has done pretty well in their conquest in the last few years, even though they haven't gotten to the tournament. We were up for that game. There's no doubt. Our intensity we have for that game probably hasn't been matched any of our other opponents this year. Although we were pretty up for Saturday's game against Samford.
Yes.
So one thing at UNO that I wanted to mention, okay, our bench really struggled scoring the ball. And, you know, 3 guys scored a bucket of points, Terrence, Jordan, and Jordan was in foul trouble, but he still – Jordan went 8-for-12 from the free throw line in that game. I mean, he got fouled a bunch. He could have shot 20 free throws if they'd have called it appropriately. And he missed, I think he was one of his first 4, but in the second half, when the game was close, before he fouled out, he was knocking them down. And Greg had a great game all the way around with 27 points and good from the field, good from the 3-point line, good from the free throw line. So those 3, and Terrence Lewis, as I said, was Mr. Consistency. When we down 3, he got a basket inside late in the game to make it where we could win it. But I am concerned that we didn't get enough scoring otherwise from our bench. I know folks didn't score at all. Dalcourt had a 3. Thomas had a 3. Of course, we didn't have Joe Charles that game.
I think Joe Charles is a young man that seems to get better each game. I think he's playing better defensively, and I think we missed him as one of the big men down low at that UNO game, him not playing. I think that was a huge factor in that game, in my opinion.
I agree 100%. In fact, I said late in the game, we're playing four guards. Joe actually dressed out, but his family was there, and they told us he wasn't going to play. And I think that was a last-minute decision. I don't know what happened there. But and not having him was a big factor because, you know, when I mentioned earlier, their big men are using their size and strength advantage to take Chancellor White to the basket and score, and they're doing the same when Jordan's got to back off, he's in foul trouble. Joe probably would have guarded some of those guys, and they may not have been as effective, and we may not have lost the lead. But anyway, you play with who you have.
Well, let me ask you this, because I was doing a lot of other things during the game, especially the first half. Greg Williams Jr.'s play, 27 points. I know, we had text back and forth while you were riding back. And I said, it was good to see him step up when we needed him. And I felt like that has been his best game of the year, not just scoring wise, in my opinion. I think we need, when that happens, I think we definitely need his play like that. But were those points that he took the ball and drove and made his own plays, or were those points that he was, giving the ball from someone else,
He did it all. He had some threes and team of folks that didn't score, but he had five assists. Some of those we just moved the ball around and he'd find Greg. So it was both. So that was, you're right, that was one of Greg's best games.
It kind of reminded me of the games, how he finished the year last year in Pensacola at the conference tournament. And if we don't need that every night, but there are going to be those times where Jordan Brown gets into foul trouble. And Jordan, I don't know what it is. It seems like it's kind of like all or nothing with him. And it's probably has to do with the officiating. He either gets in foul trouble on silly fouls and can kind of continues to do that, or he plays really great and doesn't reach in and get those silly fouls. So,
yeah, I'll mention one more thing about Greg. There was a key play in the second half, too, when we were getting a league where he actually drove to the basket, got an and one. And we actually had some nice play calls. I think that was actually a backdoor from one of the bigs.
Yep.
Might have been from Lewis. So, he ended up hitting 7 from 15 from the field, 2 from 4 from 3. Those were big threes. One big one in the first half, one big one in the second. So, and he hits a mid-range. So, good job by Greg there. We need more help from the bench. And Joe Charles, you may not show it up on offense, but you show it up on defense. And as far as UNO goes, when they play at home, they've been playing pretty well. You know, they had lost a game to Denver by one. They beat IUPIU. On the road, they've struggled, but for some reason, they play much better at home.
Familiarity is all I can think of. So
yeah. They also have a lot of transfers on their team from other schools. And so when Southland Conference play starts and they're not traveling all the way out to Oregon like they did in their last game to play Portland, and they're, traveling in Hammond or Thibodeau playing Nichols, things like that, they could do okay in the Southland. Although Northwestern seems to be the best team in the Southland so far this year with their transfers they have from Missouri State.
One thing I want to bring up, though, Mike, I'm just kind of looking at it, and I think kind of went under the wire with Jordan fouling out. He had 13 rebounds and 4 assists to go along with, and a steal to go along with his 16 points. If he doesn't foul out, that's really a great line, for the box score there. I mean,
yeah, like I said, he had 8 of 12 free throws, 4 of 10 from the field. Not as many field goals as you like. Some of those, he was pressured on some of those shots. Did he get fouled on something that wasn't called? Maybe, maybe not. Yeah, Jordan had to get 31 minutes. Lewis had 32 minutes. So they did a good job of, coming in with Isaiah and Chancellor there. they just have to go with four guards at times and way to pull it out, you know. And I call Joe Charles the most, I think he's our best defensive player on the team overall, and I think he's our most underrated player, period. Even though since he's come back, he struggled to score a little bit.
Yeah, but I think that's going to come, like you said. I think part of that has to do with a little bit, maybe possibly, of the injury there to his I believe it was his shoulder, or, you know, his arms. So,
yeah. Also, I think in the Loyola game, he got hit in the head. They're never going to tell you this because it's rules, you know, about commenting on medical conditions of players. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was in concussion protocol at the UNO game.
Ah, that does make sense. I forgot about that. Good catch there.
And he had got, and, you know, he was in the Loyola game late. You know, of course, he's not a starter, so it makes sense to the 11 guys we have.
Yep.
But anyway, you know, really comes down to it. Crazy game. Talked to Jay Walker. He called everything he saw there bizarre with all the technical fouls, change of possessions, and, you know, referee not having control of the game. Their guy, who actually had been one of their best free throw shooters, just Bowman was too big for him. He couldn't knock him in. Our guy made him. And when Jalen made the first one, I was pretty confident he was going to make the second one.
Yes.
Yeah, so it really comes down to that. And,
all right.
Moving forward, let me say this. Coach has said UNO has, to date, has not agreed to continue the series. We've played four times. The year of COVID, we played twice. We played up there in early December and then Lafayette in later December. And they came to Lafayette last year, and we went there this year. So it was four games in 3 years. The COVID year made sense to play twice because it was hard to get games. I'd like to play teams like UNO and Louisiana Tech twice in a season, home and away, as much trouble as both schools are having getting games. I don't know why UNO is reluctant to continue the series. You know, they haven't really played since the games have been in Lafayette, since Coach Marlin's been here. Not one of them has been close. And I guess maybe they figure, well, we're not bringing enough fans out there. When you're playing on Saturday during football season at 4 o'clock versus back in the old days, you know, we played in mid to late January on Saturday nights, we were in the same conference, we'd be bringing 1,000 people there. I don't know why they're not interested in renewing the series. Maybe they're just thinking about it.
It could.
Someone said when you're 0-10 against one school, maybe you want to take a break.
Well, maybe they're looking at also that they can go somewhere else and make $35,000, $60,000 versus us doing a home and away. But it's unfortunate because it's an easy trip for everyone, and it makes sense. And I agree with you. I would love to see us play Louisiana Tech twice every year, but I don't think that's going to happen. I did talk to Dr. Maggard about it. I did talk to Dr. Maggard about it, and honestly, he said, you know, it's a coaching decision, and I'm sure it's the same thing on the Louisiana Tech side. I'm sure neither one of them wants to play twice a year just because of the fact that you could, you know, if you lose both games or it can be a no-win situation, but at the same time, I get it as a coach, but for fans wise, I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. Well, especially with the trouble we have getting home games against D1 schools, and we're going to have to play more D1 schools in the future. So that might be way around it. It's not indefinite that UNO is not going to renew the series. They just have not chosen to do so as of yet. Negotiations continue from what I understand.
Well, they're probably trying to get a few dollars out of that.
Yeah, we can talk about that later.
All right, Mike, let's move on. Unless you have any last comments about the UNO game, we can move on to.
Not really. We can move on to Samford.
Okay.
And one thing I wondered about was the Samford game. I don't know when Samford played before they played us. I know I looked at some of their schedules, and they played a lot of schools very close. Louisiana Tech lost by 3. Now, they won 6 games, but they had lost by 3 to Louisiana Tech. They lost by 2 to DePaul, you know, one of the Big East schools.
Yep.
Basketball only, you know, very well-known school, by 2 on the road. And they lost to Central Florida in overtime. And again, then we right down to the wire by 3 that they had a chance to win. So when I saw all those scores, I said, these guys are well-coached and they're going to give us some trouble. It was a close game. Nice game. The thing I noticed about Samford, okay, defensively, they pressed us the whole game long. The whole game, regardless of the score. And the Cajuns did not have one turnover against their press the entire game. Yeah, we had our normal, what's our turnover number? 14. We try to stay over on the 12. And so a little higher than there. None of it came against the press. It all came in the half court. And Casey Perrin, assistant coach, deserves credit for that, for coming up with a plan, because he had the scout. Yeah.
Just quickly, one thing, I'm looking at their schedule, and I knew this a little bit, but I hadn't looked at it. But they played 6 games over 14 days before they played us. That's a lot of basketball for a college team over 14 days, you know.
Yeah, the schedule may have helped us, no doubt. Yeah, so, no doubt. And,
now, there were 6 days in between when they played us, so I'm sure that was probably their exams, that they couldn't travel or play games during that time. So go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No problem with that. But yeah, but you know, you play that many games away from home, you know, regardless if you have a little break, still may affect you. The road may have got them. But we were prepared for their press. And, you know, we generally got the ball into the point guard, and they would some way, and he would bring it up court. One of our assistant coaches told me, you know, it probably was not as hard to beat as may have looked, because once you got it in bounds and made a couple of dribbles, you were able to get it across court. But it wasn't just always getting into the point guard. Lewis came from the top of the key sometimes all the way back down court for a focus for a guy to throw it in. And Greg played point guard last year. And when they got him the ball after the initial pass into the point, they had to throw it to him. He was able to bring it up court. I was listening to an interview with Coach Murphy on Kevin Foote yesterday. He said something very interesting. The press was the main thing in the game. He said, when we beat it, we didn't take necessarily a bad shot out of it, the first shot. And I didn't even notice that at the game. We beat it. He said we actually were able to get a good shot out of the meeting the press. Sometimes we'd attack and get to the line. But we also were able to maybe get a better shot by just running the offense. And it's not like we were slowing the ball down. We'd beat the press. We probably were taking a shot with 15 seconds left on the shot clock, but with a couple of extra passes.
It's funny you bring that up, Mike, because it was something that we noticed at the game. One of my friends told me he wanted us to be a little bit more aggressive after felt like we had beat the press, that we could be a little bit more aggressive with the person bringing the ball up, and felt that we could have a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 opportunity there. So it's very interesting, and Coach Murphy brought that up.
Yes, and that was the game plan, okay? But the idea was, if you break the press and you take a quick shot, yes, if you get a layup or a dunk, great. And we did a couple of times. But if you take a quick shot in traffic, you know, the game's going to go to the pace that Samford wanted to play at. And they had a whole idea was, their whole thing was, we're going to fake the three, we're going to drive inside, we're going to kick it back out for threes. And in the first half, they made several. But in the second half, and we've talked before about the Cavs' defensive philosophy, and I think this is coming in basketball, in NBA too, at one time, is, okay, we're going to run you off the three-point line. And the second half, we held them to 2-for-10 from three. So that was critical. Yeah. And then as far as our guys, you know, Jordan, again, had it's a tough time shooting the ball because they were doubling, tripling, teaming. But I mentioned that a couple of times. Jordan did this. We ended up having 15 assists in the game. Folks had 7. Good game for him. And Thomas had a couple of baskets off the bench. But Jordan had the hockey assist a couple of times. I saw one play where Dalco throws in the ball from top of the key. He runs behind Jordan, gets to the corner. Jordan's double. He throws it out to Greg Williams. And Greg fakes a three and throws it to Jalen in the corner. He knocks down a three. So not only did we move the ball, ended up with some open shots. Cantrell hit some big shots in the second half and three. Jalen been struggling, but he hit him big time. A lot of what I call separate. Yeah.
You know, it's funny you use that term hockey assist, because when I first started watching hockey years ago, I always found that very interesting. And wondered why hockey did that versus something like basketball that doesn't. But yeah, I think that a lot of times it's a pass that leads to a basket.
Basically, what it is.
And then you got, you know, if you look at if you weren't at the game, if you look at you know, at Jordan's box score, you're gonna say that's not that impressive, and maybe the same thing even with Joe Charles. But at the same time, they can do a lot of little things that don't show up in the box score. So,
well, yes, if you do look at the box score though, and people at the game, man, who hadn't been to a game before, said, man, this Lewis kid is good. You know, he ended up having an outstanding game all the way around. 19 points, only missed three shots, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. You know, he's shooting over 90% from the line. Maybe we need to throw him out there next time we're shooting technicals.
Did he not shoot? I thought maybe I'm probably thinking of something else. So,
no, you and Greg shot technicals twice.
That's right.
And Cantrell shot him once. And 10 rebounds. So it's a double bubble for Lewis. A lot of that, of course, you know, we talk about Jordan. Well, you know, so much attention on it, and the Cajuns do a good job. I think they've actually improved offensively this year with Terrence Lewis versus Theo Kuba, who was the other guy last year. Theo was great at protecting the rim on defense. But he and Jordan didn't seem to work that well together down low on offense. Theo's hands were a little bit suspect at times.
I would agree.
Terrence is really good at what I call the 10-foot teardrop shot, you know, which really works well for when you're on a two-man game. You talked about Joe Charles. Joe Charles didn't score in that game. He did get 2 rebounds and 2 steals. But he also forced a couple of turnovers, what I mentioned before, and it happened in the middle of the second half. We were able to separate where he's really good at doubling the ball with one of the other big men because he's got long arms, so it makes it tough for the guy who gets doubled to throw it back out. One time he did that, and it forced the guy to throw it out of bounds. Next time down, he gets a block. So didn't score, but he definitely contributed defensively and helping us separate and leading to some open baskets for us the other way down court.
I think Joe Charles, I was talking with some friends about this as well during the game. Joe Charles plays he's got that wingspan that he can reach in without being right on the person handling the ball. And I think he's got very quick hands. And that's shown in his release on his 3-point shot. You know, that awkward shot that nobody that likes until it goes in, but he's so quick with that, I think it helps him on defense.
Yeah, I don't know if missing the UNO game has affected him, but you know, last two games he hadn't scored very well. He didn't score in the game against Sanford, but as I mentioned before, his defense helped this one. I wish they had a stat for forced turnovers for players, guys who force, you know, there's a player, and I think he would be pretty high up on our team for that. Again, I'll emphasize our defense is geared, and we held Stanford to 40%, and it was over 40, you know, close to 50 in the first half, probably around 30 in the second half. So defense was better. But you know, our defense is we're focused on, we're going to run you off the 3-point line regardless of the opponent. Even Coach Murphy said this the other day, when in his interview with Kevin yesterday, said, if we can force a good 3-point shooter off the line and we occasionally gave up a layup, that's okay. So here's the thing. It's you know, it's really rare. We're going to give you a layup to stop your 3-pointer. Give it to you on purpose, but if it happens, we're okay with it. That's how much our defense is focused on stopping the other team's 3-point shot. That is our emphasis on everything. And like I said, I think basketball is going to go to that in the future because with all the analytics, players are shooting more and more 3-pointers. So it's going to shift, and defenses are going to actually start to focus on that, and the Cajuns may be in the forefront of that.
Well, when we talked a couple weeks ago, I don't remember if it was your opinion or what the coaches said, but I believe you said that they wanted to stop Samford from making 10 3-pointers. And they you felt that anything underneath that was that we could win the game. And they only made eight 3-pointers. Even though they were 8 for 20, 40%, they weren't shooting and making what they had in the past, I guess.
Yeah, they made 6 for 10 in the first half, and some of them were tough shots. You know, and I think we just emphasize in the second half, you could tell they weren't as confident. We just made a stronger effort to not let them have the look. Yeah, so 2 for 10 in the second half. And we can go on to the Louisiana Christian game. And, you know, they were 2 for 23 or something like that.
I'm trying to find that. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, 2 for 23. So in the last three halves, our opponents have made 4 out of 33 three-pointers. In the last three halves of basketball for the Cajuns.
Wow.
Regardless of capability, you know, three-point shots, the great equalizer. Yes, Cajuns are more athletic than Louisiana Christian, but it just shows the emphasis we place on stopping our team's three-pointers. One guy made four. Nobody else made one.
I'm at to find the analytics again on what a three-pointer made versus a two-pointer, you know, shooting percentage-wise. I think it's like if you shoot 35% from the three-point line is equal to like 50% for any other shot.
I saw a study once. It's actually really up to you have to shoot 38 because they took in, well, obviously 33.33% from three is the same as 50% from two, but you've got to count other things for long rebounds that result from three-pointers that are missed that end up with a good shot the other way. You don't get to the line as much. And if you really make it simple, if you take eight shots and you make 3 three-pointers, you make 9 points. And if you make I guess 3 for 8 is 9 points, and which is 37%. And
4 for 8.
So it's really right at 38%. They'll count for the long rebounds and the lack of free throw shooting.
Okay. I knew there was something there, but
that's why anytime anybody gets to 40, they're happy.
I know we're talking about these games, but let me get your opinion. I'm not very similar to the mid-range jumper, I think, that we talk about as a lost start. Is rebound very similar? Because you brought it up on the three-pointer. I don't think the guys, not just us, a lot of them, realize that a three-point shot is, you know, is going to come off further than a two-point shot because
it's going to bounce long. That's why you saw a lot of offensive rebounds, I think, by Louisiana Christian in Monday night's game.
Yeah.
Ball comes off the rim different. Yeah, and it's not just us. We could do better at that. And so if the ball's going to bounce long or it's going to go up higher on a missed three-pointer, it's a different than one off near a basket or a mid-range. It definitely is. But as many teams who shoot three-pointers now, you would think teams would get accustomed to that and maybe do a little better job on the rebounds.
Yep.
Yeah, so Samford was a really good game. We talked a lot about how well they did in their other non-conference games. Yep. I think we talked earlier about, you know, they're picked pretty high in the their conference in the preseason rankings. And the way they drive the ball, they handle the ball well. A couple of their big men are semi-athletic. Overall, they're not as talented as Cajuns, obviously. We're going to go over there again next year, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is a home and home.
Good. I'm going to make that trip.
Birmingham, right?
I believe somewhere near Birmingham, if it's not in Birmingham.
Yeah. Private religious school, isn't it?
I think
so. It's a private school. I don't know if it's a religious affiliation or not. Yeah. But yeah, so I'll give you a little history with going back to Samford. The first game I ever attended as a student was against Samford. It was, I started college in the fall of 74. Due to the probation that took away the team for 2 years, didn't have the team my senior year in high school or my freshman year in college. Samford was our opponent in our very first year. The team went 7-19, but we won the first game against Samford. Guy who's a friend of mine now, Ted Lyles, was the point guard. And that was his very first game. Of course, Ted became Andrew Tony's point guard for the next 3 years after that.
Is Ted living in Lafayette now?
Yes.
Okay. So
he still goes back to Shreveport where his business is at times.
Okay. Okay. Because
But their home is in Lafayette. He used to basically live in Shreveport and travel to Lafayette. His daughter is actually married to another good friend of mine. But anyway, that was his very first game ever. The first game. So I remember that because of Samford is my first game I ever attended in college. Of course, I'd attended some Cajun games when I was younger, growing up here. So,
just
a historical perspective there.
Yep. Just FYI, Samford is a Christian college, not affiliated with any religious affiliation, looks like, formerly known as Howard College from 1841 to 1965. So,
really?
I did not know that either. So, evidently, in 1965, they changed the name to Samford University. So,
yeah, I'm sure Samford is getting a little frustrated with their having so many games on the road, you know, where they were right there but couldn't pull it off. They were 5-point downs against us at half. And you know, I don't think we ever lost the lead in the second half, but it got a couple points twice. And I keep using the term separate. When you can separate, you know, you get it to double figures and you can keep a double figure lead over a couple of possessions, is usually pretty good. So we were able to so beating the team with that kind of you know, results, even though not in wins, but how competitive they were against pretty big schools, makes you realize that's a good win for us, really good win. And by the way, you know, I mentioned they lost to Central Florida by 3 in a road game on the road, down in Orlando a week or so before they played us. Central Florida went to Ole Miss last night and beat them handily.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. One other thing on Samford, they're in Homewood, Alabama, just south of Birmingham. Looks like probably a suburb of Birmingham. So,
yeah, so our Alabama fans will be able to make that trip next year. No, that's it for Samford. That was Saturday night. Tell you the truth, Monday night comes around is one of the few times I was not that excited to go to a Cajun game. I was just a little tired of playing non-D1s, 3 out of our 5 being non-D1. And I thought they maybe they would be the weakest of the ones we played. Turned out they actually beat Centenary handily. They were 5-4 in NAIA. And, yeah, but I thought, well, they may have beaten Centenary, but looking at their lineup, I figured Centenary may have given us a closer game just because of matchups. They had a couple of taller guys. The best inside guy I saw for Louisiana Christian was a guy who looked like a tight end, number 22, looked like he could play football. I forget his name here, but he did pretty well. Might have been Bilbo. But, you know, so the game starts out, okay. Jordan's going to dominate, just looking at the matchups. And we go out to a 20-4 lead, and Jordan's got maybe 10 points or more. So, and we're playing pretty well, you know, in the other 10 points beyond Jordan. And then coach makes a decision. He's going to sub all 5 starters out. And he ended up the next couple, 4 or 5 minutes, the 5 backups play as well as Vinny Sagona. So 6 backups play for, and the next thing you know, instead of 24, it's 25-25. When we cut the lead to, or Louisiana Christian cut the lead to 2 or 3, he puts the starters back in. But it took them a minute or two to get their rhythm back, but they established control. I've mentioned this before, and I said again, I don't really like subbing all 5 starters out unless it's the last 4 minutes of the game when you're ahead by 35 or something like that, or whatever. I would prefer, and I'm not, no way I'm going to tell Coach Mullen how to do his job, that you keep one of the 2 bigs in at all times to have a focal point for the offense, either Lewis or Jordan, or you keep your starting point guard in. And if you're both big men, and maybe both of your guards are in, and that happens, I think you have some stability, and it allows the younger guys or the bench guys to actually be able to play a little looser. They know they've got some guy to give them some direction. If you watch Timas Folks play, and he hadn't been scoring well the last couple of games, he did pretty well Saturday night, Monday night. He directs traffic a lot out there. Pretty intelligent point guard. So, and that was my thought of the first half against Louisiana Christian. Jordan's going to dominate. Why'd we start sub all 5 guys out at one time? We got my goal is always to get the 20-point lead. We never got it. We had a 16, and we got it up to 16 again. I think it was 14.5. Yeah. Second half, of course, with sun comes out, we dominate again. Got the lead to well above 20 pretty quick. You look at the box score, who's doing well? Well, Jordan with 37 points, actually. But it's pretty good scoring all across. One of the things that encouraged me was Timas Folks didn't miss a shot. He not only did he have 11 assists, he had 12 points, double-double. But he went 6-for-6 from the line. You want your point guard to actually make his free throws. And he'd been struggling for there for a lot. So maybe that's the advantage of playing Louisiana Christian, is that he got his free throw confidence back. And that might help us going forward. And in the second half, you know, when the bench comes in, nobody's actually outstanding. Jalen, actually, we talked about how well he played at UNO with his 2 free throws and get a couple of big shots. He looked a little off, Jalen Alcord, that is. And they tell me he's shooting the ball well in practice. So that'll be key. Maybe tomorrow or tonight when we go to McNeese, that guy's going to have to make some shots for us off the bench. So, but in the second half, coach pretty much did what I suggested last couple of minutes. You really didn't see all 5 bench players in at one time until the very end of the game. Interesting. Our top scorer of the bench was Vinny Stagona with 5 points.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that. It's to me, I guess the disappointment, if you want to, besides the play of the five, like you talked about in the first half, is Jordan only having 6 rebounds. I felt like that was an opportunity there for him to pick up. I know he had 37 points, but you would like to see, and I know it's not easy to do, and I know he's not going to do it every game. But I'd like my big man to get at least 10 rebounds and, you know, have a double-double just about every night. So,
no doubt. There are a couple of disappointing things. You know, we talked about the good things is Jordan getting enough rebounds there. There were a lot of long rebounds, but our guy seemed reaction time just a little off. We gave up more offensive rebounds to Louisiana Christian, a team that's pretty short, than we should have. Some of that was long rebounds, and they're pretty quick. And if the ball's, if you're not grabbing it off the rim, and it's, yeah. We also did a great job, as I mentioned, on stopping their 3-point shot, but we gave up over 50% of them on 2-point shots. A lot of times, what they would do is they'd have, you know, they're shorter, but they would bring us, have the big men come out, and they would just drive right past us. We gave up way too many layups. And so the help wasn't as where it needed to be. Now, there's an interview with Jay Walker yesterday, and he mentioned that the focus is not where it needed to be. He thought had we played Wednesday instead of Monday after a game that we circled against Samford because we knew our net's going to be helped by playing Samford, and we'd seen them play in the other game. So I'm sure when they saw the film against Samford, they said, our guys are ready to play. So playing an opponent, you're obviously our man on Monday night. Maybe the focus wasn't there, no matter what coaches preached, and I may be responsible for didn't get the backside help we needed or get the offensive rebound, prevented the offensive rebounds like we did. So good and bad, but so yeah. Well on off, really good on offense. There's, you know, we shot the ball well from the free throw line. We shot well from three. We got a ball to Jordan and a lot of assists. Stayed under 12 for our turnovers. So everything on offense was fine. Defense and defense doesn't stop. You force the miss, you got to get the rebound. So actually, had we done a better job on the offensive on the defensive rebounds, we maybe wouldn't have allowed some layups on the second shots. But we're probably not going to play teams like Louisiana Christian that often going forward. And we can conclude our conversation about the schedule a little later. But that's it for Louisiana Christian. You have any thoughts?
Well, the only thing that I'll say is it's kind of like you. I don't know if it was the opponent necessarily, but just having played Saturday and then coming back Monday night, I was like, kind of with everything else going on in my life right now, I was kind of like, kind of a little bit exhausted and really didn't want to go to the game, you know, type of deal, just because we had been there two nights before. So,
yeah, well, that wasn't so much it for me. It's pretty much knowing that the opponent was our man. And, it's one thing if you'd be playing a team in the SWAC or something, you know, you're still going to probably be better than them, but at least they're going to give you you're going to have to actually prepare properly because they'll at least be Division I players.
Yes.
And also, like I mentioned, I didn't mind playing, it's not like playing Loyola, which, you know, defending an AIA champs, which is some people back and coach and, you know, the coaching staff, is some of those guys were there last year. It's a little different, though. So. I don't mind playing a couple of them in the first game of the season is fine. And if you play Loyola later, like around finals, that's okay too, because you're going to still have to prepare well because of their history and the way they play. So I would have preferred, but you know, we couldn't grab one. I'll remind people the reason we only had to play 3 non-D1s is one Southern Miss was supposed to come here, but now they're a conference opponent. So we lost that non-conference home game. We also had some set up with the Southeastern Lions to come here, but all of a sudden they have more players, more teams in their league. Several teams in the Southland had left. They all decided to come back, so they've got to play more conference games. So that was some of the reasons why we ended up having to play 3 non-D1s, but hopefully that's behind us going forward with the new scheduling requirements.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the upcoming games and then your thoughts on the schedule so far, or the non-conference schedule. So,
okay, yeah, all right, we can do that. I apologize for this little cough I've been fighting for the last couple of days for the listeners.
I understand. You've been listening to We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball, with Mike Hebert. Welcome back into We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball again with Raging Cajun fan Mike Hebert. Mike, one of the things that this basketball team, no matter what has happened on the court, off the court, Coach Marlin has been graduating his guys. I mean, Cedric Russell left, earned his degree. Theo Kuba left, earned his degree. Trajan Wesley left, earned his degree. I mean, these guys have been graduating and graduating at a good clip. But let's talk about the latest graduate. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, tomorrow, Jordan, tomorrow, Saturday. Hope it's Saturday. Actually, get Jordan Lemon. Jordan Brown's going to graduate with his degree. He'd have gone through three different universities, hung in. I'm not sure what his degree's in, but that'll be a big factor for him in the spring semester. Yes, I'm sure he'll enroll in some graduate classes, but that'll allow him, if he wants to play pro ball, and when the semester ends or when the season ends, he won't have to worry about school to go to NBA camps or G League camps or what have you. So that'll, and beyond that, he can focus on basketball, and the whole team's going to focus nothing but basketball now until mid-January. But, you know, our best player is also going to be our most recent graduate. So just, I'm sure all Cajun fans that join me congratulating him on that accomplishment. And that'll allow him, as I said earlier, to focus on getting ready for the, wherever the next path of life brings him to.
You know, it always warms my heart, I guess. Warms the Grinch's heart that when we see, especially – when it's in a season, like when what they did at the New Orleans Bowl, and for the guys that the football players that had graduated and because of the bowl game couldn't make graduation, or the football the baseball players that graduate on the field during baseball season because they miss their graduation, that just makes me feel good and want. So I'm with you. I just want to say congratulations, Jordan. And I'm sure there are other players within the university that are doing the same thing this weekend. But we're talking basketball today. So congratulations to Jordan Brown.
And by the way, I'll say this too. Terrence Lewis Jr. is in our graduate school. And I don't know what he's going to do after he's done playing here. He's only here. But my understanding is he may continue to pursue that, whatever that graduate degree is. So he's already got his degree from Jackson State. That's why he was able to come over here, even though he transferred earlier. The other two seniors are Jalen Alcord and Greg Williams Jr. And I believe they're on track to graduate in the spring.
Well, good for them as well. We'll talk more about that when we wrap up the season. We'll get some more information, make sure those guys are on their path to get their degree. So congratulations to Jordan Brown. Congratulations to Coach Marlin and the coaching staff for keeping these guys focused on school as well. So
Christy Alford is a lady he always compliments. She and Coach Harden are the people within basketball who help these people stay on track.
Good deal.
Well, recognition of those two.
Cajuns are headed to Lake Charles this afternoon to play Magnese tonight at 7. What do we need to do? What do we need to do to come out of there with a victory?
Okay, before I answer that question, can I go back to the Stanford game for just a second? Something just popped in my head.
Yeah.
Not basketball-wise, but atmosphere-wise. You know, it was great for me to see that even though the semester had ended the day before and our student attendance wasn't as it had been the first three games, that makes sense, that the band was there.
Yeah.
You brought and, that up. I think they had a lot of atmosphere to the game. So I hope when conference play comes back in January, January 5th, I think, is our next home game, that they're in there so many games as possible. It adds a lot to atmosphere to have the band there. And where I sit out, they're not too loud. They just have the right amount of noise. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the band. And I think it helped us create the atmosphere and maybe it helped us win the game.
You know, I absolutely agree with you on that. I think the band being there brings a whole different level of fun to me. And just because they play different songs than what they play at the football games. Now, through the season, we're going to hear the same songs, but that doesn't matter. I prefer that to the DJ. And I'm being old. I'm being an old man here. Get off my lawn. But I really enjoyed the band, so I agree with you. Shout out to the band, the Pride of Acadiana. And I know it's not all of them that are there, but shout out to you guys. Really enjoy you're there. I hope the band director does have them back. So,
yeah, especially since the I was on campus with on Friday afternoon with and somebody needed a ride in the family, and I noticed how dead it was because Friday was the last day of finals. I saw 2-3 people walking around campus, and those poor guys haven't taken finals at 4 o'clock. Everybody else is done. So to have the band there when the campus was deserted just 24 hours earlier, it was good to see, and congratulations to them. But we can move on to McNeese. Before we talk about the particular game, let's talk about what McNeese has done so far. They're 3-7, but I looked at their schedule, and man, it's been a killer. Financially, I guess they have to do this, but they've played at Tulane, at Tennessee, at Baylor, at Iowa. And they're going to play at Southern Miss later. I don't know if that's a payday game for Southern Miss or if it's a home and home. So a lot of schools would be 3-7 with that schedule. When I generally look at their box scores, they generally play competitive in the first half. And, you know, the bigger school sort of separates in the second half. When they play in these bigger schools, their scoring is not, you know, not that high. It's in the 50s generally, sometimes slightly below. But they have beaten Northern Iowa, who's had a good team in the past. Score of that game is 52-49. You know, I looked at the box score there, and their shooting from the field, from three-point land, was fine. They only got the free throw line 8 times, and that's why they didn't win by more, where Northern Iowa got there quite a bit more. So that was a really good win for the Cowboys. If you look at their guys on their roster, looks like their maybe best inside player is a freshman named Shoemate, you know, who rebounds pretty well. Looks like their best guard is a guy named Jonathan Massey. He had 11 points against Northern Iowa, and the best guy off the bench is number 12 named DeAndre. So, like most teams, you know, they got to rely to handle the ball, or got a lot of score inside. Now, the Shoemate guy is a pure freshman. I forget where he's from, so that caught my eye, you know, with our experienced guys inside. We may be able to take advantage of them there. I listened last night to a little bit of the McNeese Coaches Show, which is on one of the local channels now.
Yep.
And so I found their coach's comments were interesting. He said, when they're on defense, they're going to try to shrink the court. They're going to play a zone. But not necessarily they're going to double our guys. But when you hear teams say shrink the court, you mean you may not see players above the top of the key. But they know that Greg and Kentrell Garnett can hit the three at high clips, so they're going to try to keep track of those two guys while still shrinking the court.
That's to me, seems like a difficult task there. If you want to play, if you want to drop back into a zone, which I understand, kind of opposite of what we do, running people off the three-point line, they're going to looks like crash Jordan Brown and yeah. Lewis.
Right, but they also want to be able to be cognizant. Their coach said, we'll also, while doing that, we're going to know where their two guards are, their 2 3-point shooters at all times.
Did he talk about the zone he would probably play, whether it be a 2-3, a 2-1-2, or a 1-3-1 at all?
No. All he said, he didn't even want to say to use the word zone. He said, we're just going to shrink the court. He said that 2-3 times. Offensively, interesting. I'm sure they've seen some film where some quicker guys can bring our big guys out that can drive around them. That's what they're going to try to do on offense. Okay. Get us on dribble penetration. You tie that to defensively back to their shrinking the court. What Coach Murphy said in his recent interview was, in his preview was, in their other games, what they've done is they switch defenses almost every time down court. They'll be in a zone sometimes, and the zone will switch from 1-3-1 to a 2-3 to a trap, and then a man-to-man. So Coach Murphy says, okay, we're going to actually, you know, and he was pretty confident in the plan we've got for that. So we've got some experienced guys out there. We'll be able to recognize what they're doing pretty quick.
If it was me, I would play the 1-3-1 just because with the shooting, I know that you give the opportunity there for Jordan down low and Lewis down low, but very similar to what we wanted to do with Samford and Louisiana Christian. I don't want to give up the three ball, and that's where the Cajuns have excelled this year.
Yeah, well, they shoot over 20 themselves like everybody else these days on average. So we'll see what happens. As far as our guys are concerned, the way they attack that to me, regardless of what zone it is what I love, the high-low, where either Jordan gets the ball at the free throw line top of the key and tries to dump it down to Lewis. That's the way to actually beat any zone, is you get your big man, one of your big men, to flash to the top of the key where the guard can find him, and then he's got a quick pass that he can go out with the ball to. And we've had some success this year. I go back to a game with the Tech. We did a great high-low play. Lewis to Jordan, and instead of Jordan running, Greg Williams coming down from the other side, and he dunks it. So there's ways to beat the zone if you just actually pass the ball. But the key to that, all any zone, is to actually, believe it or not, is to put your big man, one of your big men, in the top of the key. Start low and come high, and you pass around. And I know they want to keep track of where Greg and Cantrell are all the time. When you're doing that, when you're shrinking the court, they're probably going to get some good looks.
Yes.
I know at UNL that Cantrell didn't get any good looks. So, but Greg did, so we'll see what happens. And Greg actually got a bunch of mid-range shots. So there's another thing you can do. When you get that, you get the ball, you don't have to shoot the three. At that point, they're scrambling. You can actually dribble inside at times and get a mid-range. So it's the team actually is not didn't go overnight. This is going to be a day trip. They're probably leaving in just a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, you talk about strengthening the court on offense-wise. I think that's where we need to keep – good spacing, and we need to spread the court because we've got the ability to shoot from the outside.
So. Spreading the court is a Korean basketball. Even when I play pickup ball, I'll notice something when I got a good guy. A lot of inexperienced people play, you'll see too many people around the ball. Your ball handler to have room has to have the other guy spread out and get away from him at least 10 feet. So I bet we'll do that. You know, I also think it would love to see our bench actually contribute more. They keep talking about Jalen Dalcourt's actually shooting the ball well in practice. Sanford, he made a couple of big ones up to separate. He's going to need to do that. I look at him as being critical maybe tonight to coming off the bench.
You know, I'm looking here. Here's a stat that scares me, Mike. They're shooting 53% from the free throw line. I don't want them to get in foul trouble because it seems like when you play a team like that, that's shooting bad and your team's on a little bit of a roll, I bet you they're going to shoot 80% or above from the free throw line tonight. If we give them that opportunity,
They're college players.
Yeah,
it's the same. It's the same thing as the Kevin Foote philosophy. If you score 10 runs in a game, you're going to score 2 the next.
Yeah,
and people make fun of them, but that's really not. It's just statistics. Things average out. Paying the piper, yeah. So if they're college players and they've been shooting 50% from the line, they're due to knock some in. So we got to keep them away from the line. It looks like the guy Massey, the top scorer at Northern Iowa, with 3 for 3. So maybe you want to keep him away from the line and go to their big guys. Yeah. So we'll see.
Massey's shooting 77% on the season, 76.5. So, I mean, it's definitely a guy that you don't want to have the ball in his hand.
He's number 5, by the way. He's number 5. Their best inside player is number 24, Shoemate. And their best guy off the bench is number 10.
Okay.
I believe. Okay. Now the game's on ESPN Plus. It's at 7 o'clock. If you can get off work early, I know there's been promotion in Lake Charles, even here is the ITN rivalry. So McNeese, similar to UNO, is really going to be up for this game, but even more so because the other comment their coach made is, you know, for us to get the recognition that we need in basketball, where our goal is, we have to beat the Cajuns. At some point, we're going to have to beat them. That's why they've got some promotions going on there. Some groups in Lake Charles are getting free tickets, and the general admission is $5. So if you want to go to the game, the $5 is for you as well. Just because you're a Cajun fan doesn't mean you can't get the discount.
Exactly. It's always a fun trip to Lake Charles. You can hit Darrow's before or after the game. You can go to the casino. I wish it was one of those on a Saturday night, but at the same time, I like the fact that it's a weekday game that's only an hour drive, so.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not on Saturday. I know we couldn't have a Saturday home game because of the graduation here in Lafayette this weekend here, and they may be having a similar issue over there.
Exactly.
I know their facility was there 3 years ago, I guess. They had just moved into it. It's 4,500, 5,000 seats, not far from their campus. So, and they had to rebuild that from their funds from the hurricane. Yep. No, they played here in the COVID year, which happened to be the hurricane year as well, because we actually housed them on our campus for a while. And we weren't scheduled to play, but then because we housed them, they agreed to play. And because of the length of time they needed to actually renew their facility, they wanted to host us when they're in their facility. We're actually going to go over there again next year.
I've got no issue with that, quite honestly.
Because we've played here twice, and it was a four-game series, so twice in Lafayette, twice in Lake Charles. We'll be going over there again in next season.
Well, we had to do that very similar to Louisiana Tech in baseball. They ended up coming here twice in the COVID year because they were rebuilding their stadium because of the tornado. And then last year we went there twice.
Makes sense. And we also were able to do it where we did it in baseball. We just stayed overnight instead of two different trips. Yeah. You're actually seeing that in NBA these days, you know, like the Pelicans are playing in Utah and not leaving. They play Tuesday night. They're playing against Thursday. Teams are getting smart with this thing than travel.
Absolutely. So anything else on UNO?
McNeese. No, that's tonight.
I'm actually sorry.
You know, McNeese, I expect a very similar game where they're going to be up for the game, but our guys know it. They're going to be up for it too. Hopefully we get some fans there. I go back to what their coach said. We know we got to beat this team eventually to get to where we get respect in basketball in Louisiana. And he talked about if we can play defense like we did against Northern Iowa and just make a couple of shots, we'll have a chance. So, obviously, Jordan's going to have a huge advantage going against a pure freshman. He's got a little more size, you know, it's 6'8", you know. But he needs to use the experience. And when they're going to shrink the court, somehow, usually these other teams have done that. I see Lewis ends up having a big game. And he's been having big games, very efficient all his last three that we talked about those earlier. So I can see him having a big game too.
You know, one thing I might have to go back and look at all the different box scores. One thing that I noticed that the Cajuns for several of our games have had very balanced scoring, meaning that we've had four or five guys get 10 or more points, which I think is indicative of what the ball that Coach Marlin wants to play, spreading the ball around and getting everybody involved. And I think that does open up Jordan's game much more, in my opinion.
Yeah. And that box score of Louisiana Christian showed that we need to get more from production from the bench somehow, some way.
Yes.
Like I said, Joe didn't play UNO. He did get a three-point play late against Louisiana Christian. He didn't score against Sanford. He may be a guy that I actually ready to bust out now that he's back in the rhythm.
Yep. That would be a good thing for us, definitely, especially with heading to Texas.
We'll play at Texas a week from today, 7 p.m. That's December 21st. Note that whenever you play at Texas, we've seen this in other sports, it's hard to get streaming. They're on the Longhorn Network, so ESPN Plus is not going to work for that. So if that's on, I guess, middle of the week before Christmas week, I'm going to have to try to find either Pete's or Walk-On's or one of the other places in town to see if they can grab Longhorn Network. I may look into that Monday or so, try to get able to watch it. Of course, Texas has had some unfortunate news off the court this week with their coach. He's been suspended. Their assistant coach has taken over. They played Rice earlier this week, maybe the same day that news broke, and they won the game in overtime. Okay. That they've only lost once. They were ranked in the top three or four at one time. Not sure if where they are now. Their only loss is at home, by the way, but it's to Illinois. But I was following that game, and in that game went into overtime as well. And Texas had a chance to win the game in regulation with one of their better shooters shooting a 1-1 with 5 seconds to go or something. He misses the front end of 1-1. Illinois ties the game at the buzzer. And then Illinois and I win it in overtime. Illinois is ranked high as well. Purdue's, I think, is number one team in the country. It's another Big Ten team. So nationally, you might want to watch the Big Ten this year as maybe the top conference of the bigger schools. But let's highlight three players that I guess when we play Texas next week, if you're able to watch it.
There's a guy named Mitchell. Number two. I do have the Longhorn Network, so I'll be able to watch it.
Yeah. The guy named Mitchell looks to be their best inside player, and he's a decent scorer. He's number 23, Dylan Mitchell is his name. He's a pretty young player as well. He had 12 points, 9 rebounds in the game against Illinois. Their best guard is a guy named Carr. I think it's Marcus Carr. He had 28 points against Illinois, and I think he had over 20 against Rice earlier this week. He's number 5. And their best guard, their guest guy, to mention another guard named Rice, who scored 11 against Illinois. So those numbers 23, number 5, and number 10 are the guys you want to watch out for Texas. 23 and 5 starter, 10 coming off the bench. I watched a little bit of their game against Rice, and they have athletes up and down the court. You know, I think athlete Greg Williams Jr. is about 6'8", some of them. Wow. So that'll be quite a challenge. That'll be our last non-conference game. We'll have over a week after that game before we start conference play at Coastal Carolina on December 29th.
Okay. Question for you here. I mean, I know this is the Rice team, which was I think I saw they were 5-4, 6-4, 6-3.
They're 6-4. They were 6-3 going into the Texas game.
Okay.
I haven't looked at their schedule.
I guess my question is, to me, you know, let's take away the names Texas and Louisiana, and I know that's hard to do because you can't just look at it statistically, but at the same time, Texas is shooting under 30% from the 3-point line, 29.8, and as a team shooting 66% from the free throw line. They only have 3 players above 75% from the free throw line. Is this an opportunity with the Cajuns if they can make the 3 balls and maybe trade a couple 2s like we, you know, maybe let them shoot some a little bit more 3s, you know?
Yes, because they're shooting close to, against Illinois. They shot 50% from overall, but only 23% from the line. Yes, you want to let them shoot the 3 ball. Maybe more so than our other opponents. I don't know if we're going to do that because our defense, like you said about Magnesia's free throw shooting, maybe the Longhorns are ready to burst out and knock some 3s down. It's hard to change your stripes. You just see how the game goes. Maybe you choose who you let shoot the 3.
It's all strategic. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they only have guys that have the most minutes. Only 2 of them are shooting above 33%. So, and no one above 40 except a guy that 7-for-17 on the year. So, I know Texas is a very good ball club, but you can definitely see by the Rice game that the whole coaching thing disrupted that game. Will it carry over to this game? Who knows?
If you've got a schedule in front of you, do they play again before we play them next week?
Yes, they play Stanford, not Samford. Stanford on Sunday, the 18th. They're actually playing in Dallas. So, and that is on ESPN2. So if you're around Sunday at noon, ESPN2, you can catch Texas and Stanford. So.
Yeah, I don't think Stanford is doing very well this year, from what I recall. What's their record there?
Stanford is 3-6. So, yeah. Losses.
Yeah, so Texas should win that game. But for Cajun fans who want a preview of it, even if you can't watch it, if you can watch them there, and if you listen to JI there, you'll have an idea of who their players are. I'm going to try to record that game and do the same.
Except for their loss to UCLA, you know, it was 10-point loss to Wisconsin. 12-point toss to San Diego State, who's ranked 17th. A 4-point loss to Ole Miss. An 8-point loss to Memphis. And then a 4-point loss to Arizona State. So they've been – Stanford has been somewhat competitive, but I agree with you. Texas should win the game. But it's a good opportunity if you want to see how Texas plays and what they do. It's a good opportunity. So
that's Sunday afternoon, right?
Yes, sir. 12 noon.
Yeah, competing with the NFL. But anyway, that's going to wrap up conference play for us. And we'll see how it goes. Right now, I'm more focused on tonight. Like I said earlier about McNeese, expect the team to play their best. When I say better than they are, you know they did, but the emotions got the best of them and ended up costing them the game. We'll see what happens tonight in Lake Charles.
And that happens in a lot of times, and it's the same thing that happens to us. When you're playing a bigger school or perceived bigger school, no matter how it looks at you, you've got a lot of adrenaline going, but that adrenaline usually can A, either throw your game off, or B, is not going to last for the whole game. You have to keep your emotions in check. So,
yeah. Well, overall in the non-conference play, to me, the key so far is the chemistry team is good. Jay Walker's mentioned that. Granted, they'll have to see how they can integrate Kobe Julian in the lineup when he comes in. He's been resting out the last few games, but not playing in the pregame warm-up. He'll be participating with the guys, but when they go back to the locker room and come back out right before game time, he comes back out and sweats. I understand he's been practicing. If he's physically clear, to me, I think I disagree with the coaching staff. I would play him at Texas or maybe even tonight just to see how to integrate the rotation. How's the rotation going to look for that as much as anything else? How's it going to affect it? Not off-court chemistry, but on-court chemistry. But that's my game there. That's not necessarily what Coach Moreland's going to do. I think they're just going to be cautious and just not play him until we get to Coastal Carolina. The chemistry, Jordan's playing at a higher level than last year, and I think that relates basically to having more help around him. Point guard that's looking to pass the ball to him. Themis has had good assist numbers the last few games. And when he's off, Mike makes some shots. And Terrence Lewis Jr. inside. What a huge pickup that was. You know, the spring fall recruiting, we brought in a couple of guards. My understanding is they'll probably look at the portal to bring inside players in the spring. And they think the success they're having with Terrence Lewis Jr. will help them for anybody else who's looking to transfer. That's is a good place to come in and flourish if you only got a year or two left, if you want to move as a big from one school to another. So those are the two key guys, I think, that have really helped us. As far as the schedule goes, right now we're 9-1. We're really we're 6-1. You got to take the other three. Not the ones. I'd like to see our stats. Our stats look pretty good. I'd like to see us without the three games. If you go to RagingCajuns.com, you can actually go to basketball. You can see individual stats and then actually show you how everything compares against our opponents. And, you know, we're doing pretty good against offensively, and even defensively, our numbers are better than you think. So chemistry and the two new guys, we'll see how it goes forward. Schedule going forward on non-conference, I think I'll talk about that for a second. Next year, we go to Samford, we go to Louisiana Tech, and we go to McNeese. And we go to a MAC school because of the MAC Sun Belt. So right now we have 4 road games scheduled in non-conference. Because of the UNO uncertainty and having to go back to McNeese again next year and it's our turn to go to Tech, right now we only have 1 non-conference home game scheduled, and that's the MAC team. Don't recall who it is right now. I know who it is, but I can't recall. Next year, the conference is going to require us to have a minimum number of D1 home games. So I bet you'll see a max of 2 non-D1s. So how do we get there? Well, the conference may increase the number of conference games to 10, at home, 10 on the road. I'd like to see that. But if it doesn't, then you only have 10 games scheduled that are D1. So, and you have to play so many D1s. So are we going to end up having to pay some swag schools to come? Maybe so. I was thinking I have another idea how to do that. You know how we're having trouble getting some of the local sideline teams to play us home at home for whatever reason? Yep. For example, Sam Houston played at ULM last night. And Sam Houston won easily. They have agreed to go to ULM for home and home, but they won't do the same for us. Lamar is going to go to Southern Miss, I'm not sure. They won't play us home and home either. Yep. I know they're down this year, but we played Southeastern, and maybe they'll come, so they were supposed to come this year, but couldn't because of their conference. Maybe we'll get them to come. But Southeastern, Nicholls, Northwestern have all played us home and home a few years ago, but recently they haven't. I remember having to go to Duquesne and Robert Morris to get away from the local schools to play home and homes. Maybe we'll have to do that, get away from the local schools who refuse to play us home and home. I guess they think we're too close. They're recruiting, and if you're playing somebody in Pennsylvania, they don't care.
Yep.
But maybe there's another way. I thought about this the other way and see what you think about it. Why don't we play, go back to these local Southland schools, refuse to play us home at home and say, okay, we'll give you $10,000 to come to the Cajun Dome when we go to your place for free. That's just an idea I had, and maybe that'll get them to come. We play $15,000 when Loyola comes. So if we do that, maybe they'd be more receptive to it. And okay, well, that may be, if you take this cost savings of the travel, that may offset having to go play in the Northeast against somebody to get some non-conference home games. And it might be better than paying $60,000 for a SWAC team to come. So that's an innovative, I don't know if it's innovative, but it's an idea I had, is pay the Southland local schools a minimum amount to come and go to their place for free. And next time I see Dr. Maggot, I'm going to bring that idea up to him. What do you think about it?
I like it. I said, in some of these schools that have better records, such as Louisiana Tech, I wish we go back to playing them home and home. The idea that I had was take, let's say, us in South Alabama, and originally, you know, when Southern Miss wasn't in the conference, is to do a multi-team event, but rotating it, you can do it once every 4 years at home. So doing a multi-team event, you know, one year play at South Alabama, all four teams. The next year we go to Southern Miss, play all four teams. Then we go to like Louisiana Tech, all four teams. And then we come to Lafayette. So every 4 years you would have two of those games at home, you know, and you could be two Sun Belt teams with two, and you'd play the Louisiana Techs or the North Texas. And at the time, I was thinking Southern Miss because,
you know. Well, maybe you could do a UAB for another regional team or Rice.
Exactly. You know, just something like that. I mean, that's the kind of thought I had. And everybody wins because – and those two games only count as one game on your schedule, but you're playing two games and back-to-back days, so you're saving some costs, too, with not having to travel to different places.
But right. Or you could do a round robin. Play all three teams. You do that, you get to play two extra games. Well, if you're allowed to play 29 games, if you play two games in the multi-team event, you're allowed an extra one. If you play three times, like you go to some of these tournaments, or you play, I think in Las Vegas, we went a few years ago, we played three games, you can play up to 31.
Well, my thought was that you would have two Sun Belt teams and two teams from another conference. So you wouldn't want to play three, you wouldn't want to play your conference opponent. So all four teams would have to be from different conferences then, which is not unheard of either. But I was looking at it, if you had two different conferences, Conference USA and the Sun Belt, or the Sun Belt and an American, and then you have it to where, you know, you're helping your conference mate out as well, is my thought. Yeah.
Well, if you did it with Rice and UAB, there'd be two teams in the American. Yeah. They're both going to the American going forward. So that's an innovative idea. Yeah, and you're only playing with the other team on their home court once. So those are the kind of things that need to be considered. I suspect what's going to happen is we're going to pay $60,000 to play Southern, and that may be fine. They're local, you know, or Grambling, but, you know, with the requirement to play more D1 home games, you know, we're going to have to pay people to come here, and people think, well, okay, you're not going to get the bigger schools for $60,000 that we can afford. We've been paying $10,000 to $15,000 for Loyola. If you go to $60,000, you'll be getting a SWAC team. And that may not be all bad. The SWAC played this year with the Pac-10, I guess, wanted to be politically correct, and they actually went to some SWAC teams.
Really?
And some of the SWAC teams actually beat them on their home court. I think Jackson State's won. Jackson State's having a really good year this year. You know, we played Jackson State last year and we lost, and they were just average in the SWAC, and they'd taken that team. And imagine they had Terrence Lewis.
Yeah.
So those are some things I think are going to happen, but looking forward to not having as many non-D1s next year. I know our administration is worried about it. Basketball's not. Basketball likes it, but they're going to be forced to come up with the $60,000. You know, that's going to have to come from the general fund versus the $15,000 they're playing to Loyola.
Yes.
Our basketball staff actually likes it because regardless of how many people come at home or the effect on the net, it just helps you prepare more for conference play when you're playing another D1 opponent. Anyway, that's next year. We're done with the non-conference home schedule now. We'll be done with the close games in non-conference with McNeese tonight, and we're done overall. And then we'll get ready for conference play. think next time we talk, maybe a couple of weeks, we can review the McNeese and Texas games and preview the road trip.
Absolutely.
To Coastal Carolina, and I think it's Old Dominion we play on New Year's Eve.
Yes. Quickly, though, before we sign off today, this is a little bit surprising to me looking at statistics. And next time we talk, though, I'm going to pull out the non-D1 opponents and see where we're shooting and all that. I'll run the stats. I'll send them to you so we can discuss them after non-conference play is over with. But here are a couple of things that are a little bit surprising to me is Kendall Garnett shooting 51% from three-point line. Michael Thomas, 50%. Joe Charles, 41%, 41.7. Greg Williams, 39.5. And then if you take in even Jalen Valcourt's had two rough games back-to-back, but still shooting 35% from the three-point line. I mean, those are things that are going to make this team win, in my opinion.
Well, that's all related to having two good inside players.
Yes.
And a point guard who can find them.
But two good inside players that are willing to kick the ball out as well, not just try to bullet to the rim, you know.
Yeah, Jordan's improved. And when we first started these discussions, I talked about that was one of our biggest needs is having Jordan throw a ball out. He's improved greatly there. He still has a little bit of things he could do better. Sometimes one of my friends noted he catches the ball when he wants to dribble to the goal and he tries to pick it back up. He doesn't hold the ball as high as his head as he wants. If he catches the pass and be looking to pass first versus looking to score and then pass it out, his numbers would even be better. Those are some really good numbers there. I do have a concern about the three-point shooting because in our last two road games, at Drake and at New Orleans, we didn't shoot it quite as well overall from the three-point line. So we'll see how we do tonight. That's something I'll be looking forward to, three-point shooting on the road.
One last statistic that I'll leave you with here is Terrence Lewis, nearly half of his rebounds are offensive rebounds. He's got 31 offensive rebounds. To me, that says a lot about the kid's character, being willing. I mean, rebounding is a hard chore, and he's rebounding and he's also able to score the ball. I really, really like that about him.
Yeah, he's been a great find. Yeah.
Yeah. And how he only averaged, 6 points last year at Jackson State?
Well, Jackson, apparently he averaged 11 and 8 in conference play once he became a starter.
Okay. All right.
He wasn't a starter till mid-year. Recruiting is about relationships. We've been recruiting Terrence Lewis Jr. since he was in junior college. Before he went to North Texas, we tried to get him. We tried to get him when he went to Jackson State. And he never held anything against the Cajuns. He just said, I think I'll fit in better here. But we had that relationship since he recruited him earlier, and that's why he came here. And if you tell him, he said he regrets not coming out of here at junior college. Of course, he'd be gone by now. He would have played 2 years.
Yeah.
So recruiting never ends. Not all about relationships, but once you don't get someone, you keep tabs with them, and if you see if they're happy or not happy, of course, you can't really recruit them while they're at the other school. You just keep wishing them well.
Exactly. All right, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say one thing about Terrence. He was the reason he he was able to come was because he's a graduate transfer. He has his degree, so he could come despite the fact he had already transferred. I think we'll be looking for guys similar to that. Maybe we can get one that's got 2 years instead of one going forward. But last thing I'll say, we did bring in two guys in the as guards in the fall. We're looking for big men in the spring, although we have a commitment from another guard from Zachary. That's all I'll say about that.
All right. Good deal. Any last thoughts on the season so far or anything coming up?
Just encourage people to get to Lake Charles tonight or watch if you can't make it. ESPN Plus, 7 o'clock.
Sounds good. All right, Mike, thank you. As always, appreciate your time and your insight. Enjoy talking basketball with you, like I said. Enjoy getting a text from you after the game and your thoughts, because I think that's important sometimes to as I get older, I tend to forget what I saw.
Yeah, and we have it in our notes there. And I do want to again apologize to the listeners for occasional cough or the froggy throat here. All this humidity is giving me a little sinus drip, but I think it's getting better today.
All right, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. You've been listening to We're Talking. So long, everyone. What's that?
So long, everyone.
All right, you've been listening to We're Talking. Craig Melosso and Mike Hebert. And we're talking Raging Cajun basketball.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.